The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. If you are listening to the podcast, it is Thursday, March 31st. If you are watching the podcast live on YouTube, it's 1 o'clock on the dot. Suck it to all the haters out there who didn't think we could start on time. Just kidding. It is Wednesday, March 30th at 1 p.m. Eastern. We are live on YouTube every day, Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. Occasionally, it'll be started a little bit later. Today's sort of a newsy, nuggetsy, notesy type of day. There's a bunch of stuff floating out there. It's just, you know, you come out of the owners' meetings and all the coaches and GMs are talking for the first time, you know, really. I guess they talk at the combine, but like this is, you know, you really start to get them, you know, chatting after free agency about certain different things. And we got, of course, tons of talk from various coaches and owners and GMs, and we will get to that. Joining me to break it down, Tyler Sullivan, aka Sully. What's up, buddy?
What's happening? Well, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, we'll just dive right in. We'll just sort of
let's do it.
There will probably be topics that I bring up that I find that are not on the rundown, but we'll just get to it. We'll do some NFL banter. We'll start in New England, where a very interesting. Let me see if I actually find the quote, because I think Debo put my mock draft in there instead of the Robert Kraft note. It's all right. Bob Kraft, of course, the owner of the New England Patriots, said, "I'm a Patriot fan, big time first. More than anything, it bothers me that we haven't been able to win a playoff game in the last 3 years. After my family, there's nothing more important to me than the New England Patriots and winning football games. That's my passion. So whatever I can do, hopefully in a small way to make that happen, I'm there. I'm not happy that we haven't won a playoff game in 3 years. I think about that a lot." This is maybe the first time I've ever heard something like this from Robert Kraft since 2000, because, you know, I mean, the Patriots won everything for 20 plus years and now they're not winning and they haven't won a playoff game in 3 years. Now, granted, one of those was with Tom Brady in his final year. The other was the COVID season. And then this past year, they went to the playoffs, but lost to the Buffalo Bills. So, you know, you're 2 or 3 in the playoffs, something that a lot of teams would kill for, Sully, but I don't fly in New England and Bob Kraft ain't happy about it.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, if you're everything out of the franchise, if you're like the Detroit Lions, you're like, okay, I would love for my drought to be just 3 years without a playoff win, you know? So clearly this is a rich person's, a rich owner's problem, a successful owner's problem that Robert Kraft is going through here. The most interesting thing that I thought about when we're talking about what he said was that was his opening statement. That was unprompted. He is clearly setting the stage here, or setting the expectation for Bill Belichick. And he said a couple of interesting things there in that press conference. There was only like 6 questions, but I thought that they were all pretty good. And, you know, it looks like he's setting the bar for what New England's season is going to be, setting the bar for Bill Belichick. And a lot of it has to do with getting to the postseason and winning a playoff game. You were able to kind of get back there last year. You were able to find the quarterback in Mac Jones. And what we've seen from these young quarterbacks in year two is they take that next step. And so as much as we're saying, you know, it's a barometer for Bill Belichick, this is also kind of a testament to Mac Jones too. Say, hey, listen, this is what we've seen from these first round quarterbacks. We've invested in you. let's see what you can, how you can develop over these next few years, this next year. Because, you know, not to compare them, but like Patrick Mahomes in year two won a Super Bowl when he was, you know, first year as a full-time starter, second year in the league, won a Super Bowl. And then you have Joe Burrow, second year in the league, coming off an ACL, went to a Super Bowl. I mean, the bar is set pretty high for these guys. And obviously Kraft's not saying go to a Super Bowl, but you do have to get to the playoffs and you do have to win.
Yeah, it's, and I guess that's not an unreasonable request. You can want coaches to go to the Super Bowl or go to the playoffs and win playoff games. And that's sort of like what happens in the NFL. I guess the deeper question is, like, what happens if they don't? I mean, the Bills are a really good football team, and the Dolphins probably, as we talked about, you know, last week, or it was last week, right? Yeah, it was last week. With the Tyreek Hill trade. Yeah, sorry, we did the emergency Tyreek Hill trade. The Dolphins probably look like a better team. So, you know, I don't know, man. I sort of wonder, like, is it like, my question is Bob Kraft sending a message to Bill Belichick that if the Patriots don't win a playoff game this year, his seat could be warm? I mean, it seems impossible to suggest that Belichick's seat could be warm.
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, obviously you're talking about a guy that's been there for two decades, is taking the franchise along with Tom Brady from a, you know, just a deplorable franchise in terms of their success. And now they're one of the blue bloods, the gold standard in the NFL. So clearly it's crazy to say that, you know, one of the builders to that is now on the hot seat. But again, you know, it comes for everybody. And you know what I find fascinating with Kraft's comments? Again, he was going on a bunch of different kind of tangents here, but I think that they were all kind of the same thing. And he was asked about the AFC, you know, how it's been so much better. And he still was like, I still plan to contend as early as this year. And so he's aware of how much better the AFC has gotten. And I think that he was pointing towards the draft too. Again, that was a big thing that he was talking about in that press conference, where it's, you know, we haven't drafted well over the past 4 years. Last year was great, but now we need to build on that for another great draft. I think that's a clear message to Belichick to say, hey, listen, I paid a boatload of money last offseason to kind of inject some life and some talent into this roster. But the only sustainable way that you can build a winner for the foreseeable future is by having successful drafts. And unlike the ones that they've had prior to last year, when they brought in Mac Jones, Ramondre Stevenson, and Christian Barmore, that was a good draft, you know, solid pillars, especially at the quarterback position. They need to improve upon that. So again, it's weird to say that Bill Belichick, the GM's getting called out, and also Bill Belichick, the head coach, is getting called out, because it's one and the same. You have to have a good draft. If you have a bad draft, you're going to be on the hot seat as the GM. And if you don't make the playoffs and win a playoff game, you might have your seat a little warm in New England as well as the head coach.
All right. So, but like, to play this out, I mean, Bill Belichick's never getting fired, right?
No, it will. I mean, if whenever that day comes, let's say that it's, you know, it gets run into the ground, there will never, it will be a parting of ways, a mutual parting of ways, that whole thing. But again, if that's even in Robert Kraft's mind, I don't understand how you let a guy like Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler walk out the door. Like, if you are setting the bar of, right, hey, listen, if you don't play well this, you know, if this is not a playoff caliber team this year and you draft poorly, well, then we might have to think about moving on. Well, you just let a GM, you know, a GM and a head coach leave, and everybody thought that was going to be the heir apparent at each respective position. Now you really have no plan, unless you want to jump into the Matt Patricia ascension, the Joe Judge ascension in-house. That's a scary proposition. The only way that it would make sense is if, you know, let's play the, you know, the hypothetical, probably not going to happen game that Bill Belichick gets fired next offseason. Do you talk to Sean Payton? Like, is he somebody that you go into and say, listen, we need to develop Mac Jones. You're great on offense. Let's see if you can help this quarterback out. That's possible. But outside of that, they really, you know, Kraft has really not left himself many great in-house options like he had with McDaniels.
Again, like, I mean, I don't want to keep asking, like, I feel like I'm beating this into the ground, but there's no, I mean, I've just always been under the impression that Bill Belichick is going to coach until he is done coaching the Patriots, and then he's going to walk away, and then Bob Kraft is going to hire somebody else, assuming that, you know, or Jonathan Kraft will, if, you know, if he's taken over. Like, the idea that a guy who wins six Super Bowls over a 20-year span could have three bad seasons, two of which he went to the playoffs in, and then get fired while
I don't see him. I mean, let's be honest. I don't think he's getting fired. I think it has a lot to do with Tom Brady.
That was going to be my next question. Like, does Tom Brady's success drive some of this Bob Kraft FOMO, man, Belichick, you drove Tom away and look, he's still great sort of potential resentment between the owner and the head coach?
Yeah, I don't even know if it's that, where it's resentment about letting Tom Brady go, because at the end of the day, Kraft owns the team. He could, you know, he's the one that allowed Tom Brady the ability or waived the ability to be able to franchise Tom Brady and let him go into the open market as a free agent back in 2020. So, you know, he is not an innocent party in all of this, but he did choose the head coach over the quarterback. And if that coach is making him look bad after that decision where it just hasn't worked out, meanwhile, Tom Brady is having on-field success, winning a Super Bowl, taking Tampa Bay to the playoffs every year, that does, again, make you look bad in your decision-making as the owner. Again, I don't think that he's going to let Bill Belichick go just because of that, but I clearly think that he wants to see some sort of improvement there, whether it, you know, and it really does start with the draft, in my opinion. Because if there is a promising young core around this team, unlike what we've seen in years past, especially the last four prior to 2021, there's really no hope to try to get this thing turned around. For years, the Patriots would make fun of teams doing what they did last offseason, spending a boatload of money, all this guaranteed dollars. And yes, it injected a lot of talent. It made them a playoff team last year, but kind of barely. I mean, you saw the difference between Buffalo and New England in that playoff game.
They're stupid enough to pick New England to beat Buffalo, and then you're just like, what are we doing here? Buffalo is so much better than New England.
Exactly.
So much. Like, the difference between Buffalo, it's not the same gulf that it used to be between New England and the rest of the AFC, but it's a pretty wide gulf between the Bills and everybody else in the AFC East, excuse me, but it's a pretty wide gulf between the Bills and then the Dolphins, Patriots. And you see that reflected in the odds. Like, the Bills are minus 200 or something, and those two other teams are plus 4 or 4 to 1. And I sure as hell wouldn't bet Belichick and Mac Jones 4 to 1. Now, it's also possible that Mac Jones is freaking awesome this year, that he takes a big leap forward. But then you look at, like, there aren't any weapons around him.
Well, see, that's not even my biggest concern, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that there are enough weapons from, if Mac Jones takes a leap, all of those guys around him could be made better. Hunter Henry had a good year in the red zone. If Jonnu Smith gives you anything more than what you got last year after all the money you gave him in the offseason, that's an interesting pairing at the tight end positions. They formed a connection, Mac Jones and Kendrick Bourne did. You can make a case that if Mac Jones elevates, that offense, again, will be much better. The talent will look better on paper. But for me,
And then the other thing, we talked about this on Tuesday's podcast, but I want to circle back with you because you know the Patriots as well as anybody. Belichick said that he's not going to have an offensive or defensive coordinator this year, and he can always change his mind. He can do whatever he wants. I'm not that big into titles, he said. And then he also was asked about who's calling plays, and he said, we don't have to call any plays for a while, so don't worry about it. Basically, my theory was Breach was like, Breach was like giving Belichick credit for this. I actually think that Belichick doesn't know who's going to call plays right now and scared to say, my offensive guys are Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, and my defensive guys are my son. And it's like, because then that's like, wait, what? Like, what? I'm sorry. People will kill him for that. People will kill the Patriots for that. And I don't think he wants a full offseason of the New England media just grinding on him, asking why Matt Patricia is in charge of the offense when he's a defensive guy who, you know, I mean, had success, you know, running Bill Belichick's defense, but then floundered miserably in Detroit and came back.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's the thing that concerns me more than not having weapons around Mac Jones. It's the coaching that's going to be around Mac Jones. You can get away with a lot of transitions and not naming offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators when you had Tom Brady there, who was basically a de facto offensive coordinator under center, knowing, you know, I mean, we've talked about it with Tampa. He's basically like teaching Byron Leftwich. You know, they're basically peers at that point in terms of, you know, coaching ability. And so for me, when you have a young asset like Mac Jones, I just don't know how in good conscience you can hand that important of an asset to a guy that, I mean, in all likelihood, it feels like it's going to be Joe Judge handling the quarterback. I mean, that's kind of what things have been, the way things have been trending, things have been talked about, rumored, speculated that Joe Judge is going to handle the quarterbacks with Matt Patricia kind of sprinkling in there as well. I mean, just think of the two offenses in New York and in Detroit. when both of those guys were head coaches. And even go back to this offseason when I forget who said it. It was one of the owners of the New York Giants. I don't know if it was Mara or whoever, but they were saying about Daniel Jones, we did everything humanly possible to mess this kid up. And in that includes hiring Joe Judge as the head coach.
Yeah.
And so when you're talking about a first round quarterback being absolutely ruined in Daniel Jones, you're now handing that guy to Mac Jones. To me, that's just extremely worriesome for his development there. If you're telling me that you're going to have this, you know, what we saw in I think it was a Football Life with Bill Belichick, where he's sitting down in the room with Tom Brady, having these one-on-one meetings and developing him as he goes along, then sure, I'd be interested to see how that goes with Bill Belichick. But if you're telling me that we're handing it to Joe Judge or Matt Patricia, that scares the crap out of me.
I mean, and again, like, even aside from the fact that, you know, Matt Patricia was defense, it was always been defense, and Joe Judge was specialty, has always been special teams. Like, the optics of giving it to two abject failures of head coaches who have never coached offense before, it reminds me of when, and Debo, I'm sure you remember this, when Andy Reid fired Sean McDermott because Sean McDermott couldn't live. Jim Johnson died. Sean McDermott took over the Eagles defense. And when it didn't work out as perfectly as he needed it to, he fired Sean McDermott, which ended up being a disastrous decision because McDermott was great in Carolina, is now a great head coach in Buffalo. And he hired the offensive line coach, Juan Castillo, to be his defensive coordinator. I mean, surprise, surprise, it turned into a disaster. Debo, you of course remember that, right?
I remember that. Yeah, bad move by Big Red.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's what ultimately led to Andy Reid's downfall in Philadelphia. And so, like, I really do think that's why Belichick doesn't want to name names.
And I just don't understand, you know, again, it's the naming, you know, titles and everything. Like, they have done that in the past, but it's been very clear who the offensive or defensive coordinator was. It was Matt Patricia. Usually it was like he waits a couple of years and then he ascends to that title. But we all know he's the one that's calling plays. Same thing even happened with Josh McDaniels. And, you know, right, even going back to last year, I know it's kind of a little bit more murky with Steve Belichick and Gerard Mayo, and you don't know who's running the meetings and calling plays on Sundays. But at least you have a somewhat of a two-headed monster of kind of who is running things a little bit, especially on game days. You know that Steve Belichick is calling the plays. It seems like during the week it's a little bit more Gerard Mayo. On offense, you just don't have that right now in New England, which is a scary proposition. I was all for them possibly going after Bill O'Brien from Alabama. Again, that would have made all the sense in the world. Now, I don't know if they're trying to skirt some rules, you know, in the league. You know, again, if you're hiring Bill O'Brien as the offensive coordinator, doesn't that you have to go through the Rooney rule and all that kind of stuff too? So maybe there's something that they're trying to avoid there. I don't know what it would be in terms of just trying to not want to, you know, and there's also the famous quote of Belichick not wanting to poach other guys, particularly from Saban. So maybe
he said it to Saban. Like they were both acknowledging like that it pisses him off when guys leave their program and take other guys. I think it would be a little different with Belichick and Saban, but I'm sure that before Belichick would call Bill O'Brien to ask about his interest in the job, he would call Nick Saban and say, hey, are you, you know, what's the deal with Bill O'Brien? You know, what's the deal with Bill? Are you happy with him? Do you want him to continue there? I'm looking for an offensive coordinator, but I want to check with you before I reach out to him.
Yeah. And you know, the same thing was, you know, again, I'm not saying I wanted Adam Gase, but at least you're talking about somebody who would have had, in theory, the title as offensive coordinator. Even if they promoted Nick Caley to tight end.
He plays.
Sure. Right. Even if, yeah, exactly. There's really nobody who has experience calling plays right now. Even if you promoted Nick Caley, the tight ends coach last year for New England, as the offensive coordinator, I think we all would have been, all right, well, that's a little weird. You know, he's a little inexperienced, but we'll see what happens. He worked under Josh McDaniels, obviously under Belichick. We'll see how that goes. You know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that he's any good, but they just haven't done that. And the fact that it's so bungled up right now, again, it's March. It's just about to be April here. We have plenty of time between now and the start of the season. But you want your quarterback, especially Mac Jones, as well prepared as humanly possible for this year, too, especially when your owner is setting the bar of win a playoff game. Or, you know, we don't know what that or else is, but he's setting the bar as to win a playoff game. You would think that you would want to have things lined up a little bit more.
Yeah, it's – I mean, I from a 30,000-foot national perspective – or whatever the hell you want to call my opinion. guy sits in chair and watches football. It's very confusing and concerning and just so out of character. Not having the titles is not out of character for Bill Belichick because he did this, I believe, after McDaniels left for Denver the first time. And then he may have even, I don't think he did it after Charlie Weiss left. I think McDaniels was immediately the offensive coordinator after Charlie Weiss left, but I could be wrong. But the larger point being is that, I mean, it's just very, I have to imagine that inside of the greater Boston area, this is creating more than just a little bit of panic.
Oh, local radio is just fantastic right now. It is. Oh,
I'm sure.
They are run like the chicken with their heads cut off. But but rightfully so. Again, and they, you know, we've said it all around here, and I just said it earlier. It's a lot easier to stomach the murkiness of the head coaching masthead when you have a quarterback in Tom Brady that can kind of mask all of those things. When you have a quarterback that's not Tom Brady, but a young quarterback that you're still developing. I mean, we all know this. These young quarterbacks are extremely fragile. If something happens, it could alter their trajectory one way or another. They could become an all-time great, or they could just completely fall by the wayside. And a lot of that has to do with coaching. I mean, you see that all the time. If you fall to the right team, if Patrick Mahomes falls to the Kansas City Chiefs and Andy Reid, it's a match made in heaven. If he goes to the Chicago Bears, is he the same Patrick Mahomes? Probably, because he's extremely talented, but is he to the heights that he's achieved already? Probably not. And so you see that now with Mac Jones. Again, I don't expect him to have that type of an impact right away, but you want your first-round quarterback to be an elite quarterback. You take him in that round, you take him as high as New England did. It's the highest seat Belichick has ever taken a quarterback in New England. You want that investment to work out, and so you want to surround that as best as you humanly can. And the fact that they haven't right now is a little concerning.
Okay. I didn't mean to go that long with the Patriots, but I do think it's a big offseason topic. I mean, like Bob Kraft is publicly stated. Anyway, let's move on to the next team. I know, a team that we don't talk about enough on this podcast, the Philadelphia Eagles. A couple of items here, and Debo, feel free to jump in. One, Jeffrey Lurie said that the Eagles are, quote, committed to Jalen Hurts. Sully, I'll ask you this first. Do you actually believe that? Because they were definitely committed to Carson Wentz. And they've been committed to quarterbacks before, but I think they're committed to him for 2022. I don't know how much further past I'd buy into that.
Yeah, I'm probably right there with you on that. I mean, I don't believe any of these teams when they say they're committed to quarterbacks that aren't on a $500 million, $250 million deal.
Trader Carson Wentz on his deal, though. I mean, like, you know, it's like...
Right. But I mean, you know, even look at Seattle this offseason. They're like, it's not our intent to trade, or, you know, it's not our intention to trade Russell Wilson. And then now he's a Denver Bronco. So, I mean, you know, again, any of these teams, it's all posturing. But ultimately, I do think this, you know, if this was a different quarterback class, I think that conversation in the draft gets a little bit more interesting. But the fact that it's not as, you know, heavy at the top, I don't think that you're having this crazy conversation with Philadelphia where you're like, oh, maybe you package all three and move up to number one or number two to go get a Kenny Pickett. I mean, it's just not that type of draft this year. So I think it's a lot easier to say that you're committed to Jalen Hurts this year when there's no slam dunk kind of guys in the first round. And, you know, you've already kind of gone by the wayside in terms of free agency and the available quarterback. So I'm with you, especially for 2022. I think that I believe them. I'll take that at face value. But beyond that, if you have a kind of an abysmal season with him and he takes a step back, then you got to reevaluate.
Yeah, I agree with that. Debo, your thoughts on the commitment to Jalen Hurts here?
Yeah, easy to say on March 30th when there was some speculation that they at least were in the running for someone like Russell Wilson or in the running for someone like Deshaun Watson. And both of those didn't end up happening, I think, for different reasons. Maybe the Seahawks not wanting to deal within the conference. Deshaun Watson apparently has these allegiances to Jalen Hurts as a Houston native and has known him for some time and really wouldn't even have accepted or considered a deal to Philadelphia. And I think it would have been wrong for the Eagles to not pursue those options because they're both clearly right now upgrades over Jalen Hurts. But yeah, easy to say now. I'm committed to rooting for Jalen Hurts in 2022. And I think he does have a path. We discussed it over the past 2 weeks. He's right now, it speaks to the level of the play in the conference, but like the sixth, seventh best quarterback
in the NFC. And I think he's got room to improve. Last year was essentially his rookie season.
Yeah.
He was, I would say, slightly above average and got a team to the playoffs that a lot of people counted out. So I'm in on Jalen and kind of seeing his growth potential.
And I think that that's right. I think that, you know, again, let's just say the hypothetical game, Kyler Murray does an about face and wants out of Arizona, or Lamar Jackson, this thing just goes completely haywire. The Eagles need to do their due diligence on that type of a player. That's a clear upgrade at the position. You have to look at that. It's a very similar thing to what Cleveland just did. It's a clear upgrade, Deshaun Watson, talent-wise, over Baker Mayfield. So you have to, you know, at least consider that as an option. But you're not doing it just to get like Jimmy Garoppolo, or you're not doing it to get Baker Mayfield. You might as well just continue to see what you have and develop Jalen Hurts.
And Jalen Hurts is not a first-round pick, so they don't have to worry about picking up the fifth-year option after this year anyway. You know, you can go two more years, see if he works out. If he continues to get better, you franchise tag him, and then you can go from there. I also think it's worth pointing out, too, that, like, and we don't talk about this enough, really, because the draft was so good, but the 2020 draft, you know, featuring, of course, you know, Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert, and Jordan Love and Jalen Hurts, too. The Jordan Love thing is just a weird one. But the of the four guys who have been thrust into heavy playing time as rookies or since their rookie season, I mean, doing that as a rookie, like, we're so, like, Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert probably kind of ruining it for definitely for Tua and maybe for Jalen Hurts a little bit, because you're talking about different – everybody's a different learner. Everything's a different situation. It was a COVID offseason. And then even 2021 was not a normal season in terms of how you operated. So I do think that being patient and is the prudent measure with you know, both Tua and Jalen Hurts. And I applaud the teams for doing that. More importantly, what do we think about the Kelly Green unis coming back?
I love it.
Maybe the best uniforms in sport.
It's awesome. I love that all these teams are starting to do this. I know it was the Creamsicle Buccaneers ones. I'm waiting for my New England Patriots to bring back the Pat Patriot ones. I'm sure that announcement's coming soon. It's been speculated that's going to be coming, the same type of thing in 2023. But I love all these throwbacks. I was a big proponent of it when we started to do this, like the Color Rush Thursdays. I'm like, why are we not doing I didn't like the mustard green Jaguars versus the baby blue Titans on every Thursday. Why are we not doing like throwback Thursdays instead? Yeah. Where everybody just goes to your old school uniforms. Again,
powder blue Chargers, Kelly Green Eagles. It's weird. You have to sort of pick your throwbacks and how you assign them, I think. And so it's like a cycle of every two or three years. The NFL doesn't want to be doing it. Oh yeah, look at that.
I mean, come on. I mean, that's great.
It's just gorgeous. Debo, how excited does this make you? I have to assume this is maybe more important to you than the Jalen Hurts news.
Clearly. You know, my weekly jersey that I wear on a weekly basis is the 95-96 Kelly Green Mike Mamula jersey. I don't know if I'm like in the market to upgrade, just because I guess Devontae Smith would be the pick. If you're buying an Eagles jersey right now, we'll see who they draft in the first round this year. But I'd much prefer, you know, buying the old school Reggie White and just having that live on forever rather than, you know, dealing with people that thought, you know, they were buying a Carson Wentz jersey and thought that they could wear that for the next 10 to 15 years. And then it ended up being another, you know, 2 years.
Yeah. The Wentz jersey is a tough scene. If you drafted that, I'm trying to think if there's a potential pick in the first round where you could, like, is there somebody named White in the first round that the Eagles could take?
Get the 92 at that point, because he's not going to have the same number. Just get the 92 if you want to go Randall, clearly, Seth Joyner. Just go old school.
I did something very similar to what you're trying to do, Will. I did I'm obviously a Celtics fan. I grabbed a Kemba Walker number 8 jersey. And I was like, well, if it doesn't work out for Kemba Walker, Antoine Walker.
There you go. And
you know what? Kemba Walker didn't work out. So now it's an Antoine Walker jersey.
But does Kemba wear number 8, too, just like Antoine?
Man, it was the same thing.
I loved Antoine on the Celtics. Yeah, I used to play in NBA Live 2000 with him all the time.
See, that's perfect with the same number.
Yeah. But, like, how often, you know, again, that is, you know, a once in a blue moon type of thing there.
Right. But, you need the Eagles to trade for Zach Cunningham and him to wear 12. So it's like, or sign Zach Cunningham.
But I love it. I mean, they were even saying that they're going to try to make these as close as humanly possible to the actual throwbacks. I mean, so again, you're getting, and it's taken a long, it's going to take a year, I think, you know, for both, for I think all of these. I think this is all 2023 so far. I know the creamsicles for Tampa Bay and obviously Philadelphia, it's going to start in 2023. But this is exactly what the NFL should be doing. It's that perfect nostalgia hit where you're bringing back these old school uniforms. I even like what Tampa Bay does where they completely throw back the stadium. I think that, I forget what they call it. I think they might have called it like, you know, I forget what it's called, like a homecoming day or something like that. Yeah. But they pretty much do the whole stadium in creamsicle. I mean, that's awesome. This is exactly what teams should be doing.
One more before we get to a break. Lamar Jackson tweeted out on Wednesday morning, "I love my Ravens. I don't know who the hell putting that false narrative out that I'm having thoughts about leaving. Stop trying to read my mind." And then an eye roll smirk emoji. I think that's full eye roll emoji for when it's on Twitter. I mean, it's basically the buzz was that, and he made me taking this firing the shot. People added me apparently. Maybe he's coming to Jason Lock and four. I don't know. You know, the Deshaun Watson contract and the fully guaranteed nature of it has caused people to speculate that Lamar Jackson will want a bigger contract because he has a better long-term resume than Deshaun Watson and none of the off-field issues that Watson has dealt with. In addition, there was a quote from Steve Bisciotti, the Ravens owner, who said that at some point, Lamar needs to call Eric DaCosta, the GM. He can't just be having Eric call him every week and say, "Lamar, you need to get in here." So, sort of competing narratives and you know, maybe Lamar should, you know, be taking it up with his owner instead.
Yeah, I think that this is an interesting conversation. Again, you know, you guys have talked about this a bunch where, you know, he doesn't have an agent, right? So it's kind of a different type of negotiating that we're going to be seeing. It's not going to be that traditional here with him. And I think Lamar is, I mean, I understand why, you know, they like, "Hey, come on in, let's get this thing done." I actually don't hate the way he's playing it. If you're talking about maximizing dollars and maximizing the amount of time or amount of money that you're going to make here, the longer you wait, the better. I mean, what's, you know, for him right now, what's the difference between signing the new contract right now or in training camp? I mean, you never know what can happen here. Kyler Murray could sign a long-term deal with the Arizona Cardinals that completely changes the landscape yet again, or at least makes the Deshaun Watson or new deal with the Cleveland Browns the norm. And then it's not just an anomaly that the Baltimore Ravens can say, "Hey, listen, that's not actually what the market is dictating." He can wait till training camp or whatever and say, "Hey, listen, you know, Kyler Murray might have got that deal too. And so hold on now. I'm better than both of those guys, or I have a better resume than both of those guys here." So, you know, it's a little bit unorthodox, but again, it's unorthodox because it's not an agent. There's not that traditional dance that everybody's used to. I don't mind the way he's playing it right now.
I don't either. And look, you know, worst case scenario, the way Lamar Jackson plays, I would rather have that big contract than have to go to the franchise tag.
No, but for sure. But if you're him, I don't think that he's looking at it that way. I think he's just like, he's probably thinking he's invincible. So he's like, I'm going to play till I'm 40. I'm going to do the same thing.
And we also did the math on yesterday's show where, you know, he gets his fifth year option this year. And then the following year, he's going to get like $35 million fully guaranteed. And then all of a sudden, you know, your contract starts to become cumbersome. And eventually you can get to the point where you would hit the open market and the Ravens couldn't stop you or would just have to throw everything at you. So it's not a crazy idea. I lied. One more thing before we get to the break. Actually, you know what? We'll take a break and we come back. We'll talk about quarterback movements this offseason. And I'll mention the one more thing relates to what we're going to talk about next.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
So Roger Goodell did his annual owners meetings thing where people ask him questions and he doesn't actually say anything. And, you know, if you want to be a big J journalist, you got to get your question asked. There were a couple of new faces, though, asking questions, including a Houston Tech. Did you watch it? Did you see the?
No, I didn't see it. Okay. I saw clips on Twitter, but that was it.
The guy. So there was somebody trying to ask him. I don't even know. I'll see if I can find it. I don't even know who it was. I'm not trying to be mean. I just never heard of him. And he raised his hand and got to ask Goodell a question. And he was trying to ask Goodell, will you circumvent, would you be willing to, so Deshaun Watson got $1 million for this year under the auspices that if he is suspended, the NFL wants to be able, or that he won't lose a ton of money because it was Brooks Kubina, who is a Texans beat writer for the Houston Chronicle. I just never met him, I don't think. And he kind of stumbled through the question, honestly, and he didn't. Goodell, he asked the question. He's like, would you be willing to take a look at the contract of a player who was being? And Roger Goodell's like, I don't understand your question. And so then he like it was asked really poorly, and he stumbled through it. And eventually, Goodell kind of answered it, but Deshaun Watson's name never got mentioned, nor the contract details. But Goodell was like, this is the personal conduct policy. We can basically do whatever the bleep we want, you know? And it's true. The NFL can, and I don't think with the personal conduct policy, there's actually any maximums or there's no minute, you know, with on-field fines for stuff you do, there's a max you can find somebody, right? You can't find somebody $5 million for dirty hits. Yep. For off-field stuff in the personal conduct policy, I don't think there are maximums. And it actually reads, depending on the nature of the violation of the player's record, discipline may be a fine, a suspension for a fixed or an indefinite period of time, a combination of the two, or banishment from the league with an opportunity to reapply. And while the question ended up being bad and Goodell's answer was kind of vague, I think we ultimately get to the fact that the NFL can suspend Deshaun Watson 6 games, take his 6 game checks, and fine him $500,000 or fine him $1 million, whatever they want to fine him, if they believe that the contract the Browns negotiated is purposely designed to circumvent disciplinary financial loss. So I just think that's kind of interesting. Also, Goodell pointed out that it is unlikely, Sully, for this to be a commissioner's exempt list situation with the criminal case aspect of it out of, like, already moved on from, unless it pops back up, of course. So I just found those two things kind of interesting as it relates to Deshaun Watson, who is your number two ranked offseason quarterback move on the field.
Yeah. And again, what we're talking about here in terms of the punishment and possible, you know, fines and all that stuff. I mean, you know, even if they fine him like $1 million or something like that, like, wasn't that, I was trying to look it up really quickly. Wasn't that Brady's fine for Deflategate? Wasn't that like the biggest in NFL history or whatever? So, like, you know, even if like they fine him that much, it's
the Patriots paid $1 million.
Yeah. But like, it's not like he's going to get like the biggest fine in NFL history. They're still circumventing it in some way. It's just a matter of how much are they circumventing that possible suspension and missing out on money in terms of game checks and all that stuff. But in terms of, like, we're talking about here, impact on field type of additions here, you can argue that this is number one. I mean, if everything off the field is not happening, it is a decade-setting move for the Cleveland Browns. I mean, Deshaun Watson's only 25, 26 years old. He is as talented and in the realm of a Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen. He is firmly in that tier. I mean, he was a guy that was taking the Houston Texans, who are, you know, arguably the worst team in the NFL, and making them competitive and putting them in playoff situations and basically doing it on his back. And so when you add that now to Kevin Stefanski in Cleveland, I understand the AFC is a lot more different. Obviously, you're in a division now with the Baltimore Ravens, obviously the Cincinnati Bengals, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are no joke defensively. It's going to be a lot tougher, but you're talking about adding a quarterback that could realistically set you up for the next decade in terms of his talent if he stays healthy, which is crazy.
Yeah, and if Watson were completely clean off the field, yeah, I agree with you. He's the number one move because Cleveland built up this roster. And again, we're doing Sully's top five quarterback offseason moves. I didn't do a great job of transitioning it, but I wanted to get the Watson thing in there because I thought it was important. And I do think that Roger Goodell basically said in his press conference, Deshaun's getting something.
Yeah. Of course, and that's what takes it to number two. And I think we talked about it too, even, you know, grading moves, whatever it was last week, where I gave the Browns like a B+, because there's so much risk here for the franchise. When you talk about the compensation that they gave up, 3 first-round picks, you're losing your best cracks at franchise foundational players for basically the next half decade. And if all of a sudden you're going to lose out on, you know, I don't know, a half a season, probably not a full season, but if you get like 6 games or something like that for Deshaun Watson this year, you know, Jacoby Brissett's a good quarterback and everything, but I don't think he's going to lead you to 6-0. I don't think he's going to. You're lucky if you're hovering around 500 at that point, especially, you know, depending on who they play. If they have division games early, I mean, Cincinnati's going to be cooking on all cylinders. Same thing with Baltimore, Pittsburgh. Yeah. You never know. Like, that's not going to be easy for them. And in turn, those picks going back to Houston are going to be that much better, you know, or at least for 2023. So there's a lot of risk there in terms of the money that you gave them, the draft capital that you gave up. If things go just a little bit sideways, I mean, we almost felt that last week where there was another county was coming out with another, another case around. If something else sprouts up here, this thing has the chance to completely go nuclear.
Yeah. And look, the NFL has, again, full authority to do whatever the hell it wants to do. If the NFL believes that, you know, I don't know, 18 of these plaintiffs are, you know, have no case, but 4 of them were, you know, and like, it's Mary Jo White will be handling it. And Roger Goodell, man, talk about, like, he, in the 2020 CBA, they made such a big deal out of getting Goodell's authority out of the way. Like, this is too much. It's crazy how he's in. And owners are like, yeah, suckers. That's right. So, yeah, get all worked up about that. We're like, don't worry about us slipping these gambling rules in here and all this other. Like, hey, we're going to give you weed and Roger won't be in charge of discipline anymore. How's that sound? And everybody's like, yeah, we won. It's like, by the way, we still have franchise tags, salary caps, and everything's designed to work for the owners. At any rate, I think Goodell's kind of dodged a bullet on this one because he's not in charge of it. Like Mary Jo White is, and Mary Jo White is not going to be soft on a guy with 22 different accusations of sexual assault. If even like a quarter of them, or even like an eighth of them, appear to have some, you know, some teeth to the allegations, she's not going to be like, oh, let's just suspend this guy 2 games, you know, because then the NFL looks stupid. You know, he could get suspended for a full year.
Yeah,
like that's not that crazy.
It's not out of the realm of possibility for Commissioner Exemplis, you know, to start the year. And all of these things are still very much in play for Deshaun Watson, which makes this thing very, very interesting. But again, it's because he's so talented, that's why it's number two on this list. I mean, we're talking about all these crazy things. You would think that would put you at the very bottom of these lists. But the fact that he is as talented as he is, and again, that's just the way it is on the field. He's better than a lot of other quarterbacks. This is a move. If Cleveland lands on their own 2 feet after this whole thing, you might have set yourself up for the next decade with this quarterback. So that's why it's number two. It's not number one for all the reasons that we're talking about, but from the sheer talent on field standpoint, I mean, you're talking about Kansas City, Buffalo, and that's really it. Everything else is a conversation in terms of how talented you are at quarterback.
Yep, I agree completely. Matt Ryan to the Colts, number 5. Look, I got to be honest. Dejani was disrespectful of the Matt Ryan thing, but you weren't high on it either. I think Matt Ryan should be number three on this list.
Okay.
Five is too low. Matt Ryan still has a lot of good football left in him. And as Jim Irsay pointed out, in a way that ultimately, like, he really slapped Carson Wentz in the face. I mean, it was pretty, like, he said that it was just time to move on.
Like, we have to run away as fast as humanly possible.
Yeah. He said, I think the worst thing you can do is have a mistake and try to keep living with it going forward, Irsay said via the Indianapolis Star. For us, it was something we had to move away from as a franchise. It was very obvious. That what he's talking about is Carson Wentz. I mean, God, you think he hates Carson Wentz or what?
I mean, that is just unbelievable. You do not see owners be that blunt about a player. I mean, you know, I don't think he specifically named him, right? It wasn't like,
but he never said he won't say his name. I bet he hates Carson Wentz. He also then said, no disrespect to Jacksonville, but I mean, they're the worst team in the league. You play well and hard for the first quarter or so, and they're looking to go to the locker room and clean it out. I've never seen anything like that in my life. You say, my God, there's something wrong here. It needs to be corrected. I think we feel like we did. And they said, and then he, again, didn't it, will not say Carson Wentz's name, added, your guy's got to pick you up and carry you through Jacksonville. He has to do it. Not an option. Has to. No excuses. No explanations. I mean, just an added, hold on. Here we go. A little bit more. You search for the right chemistry with any team. In football, it's as important as any sport that there is. If that chemistry is off, if it isn't there, it can be extremely detrimental and lower performance to a degree that is stunning and shocking. He added, for us, the fit just wasn't right. I don't know why. A lot of times you don't know why, but you know it isn't. It was important for us to move in a different direction. My goodness gracious. Now, he also then added on Matt Ryan, I think it was really quite remarkable and a great tribute to Chris, talking about Ballard, the GM, to generate strong trade interest and get the deal done with Washington. I don't lose the fact that it was a pretty big blessing from the football gods, where we were and where we could be if things don't materialize to that level. You end up cutting Carson and we'd get nothing. And then the Matt Ryan trade. I just think that I would have Matt Ryan higher.
Yep.
Is that Chris Ballard and Frank Reich, if they didn't come away with an impressive solution to the quarterback problem this offseason, Jim Irsay is kind of kooky. I mean, he's obviously a little eccentric if we'd call him crazy if he didn't have money, but he's rich, so he's eccentric. And because of that, I could see him, if they ended up with Jimmy G, like a bum shoulder Jimmy G, or just Baker Mayfield, like cast off from the Browns, I think that Irsay would really tighten the screws on them. And if they didn't make the playoffs and the AFC is deep, they'd be in trouble. And I think Matt Ryan has just this gravitas about him. And, you bring him in, he meets with the owner. But, Irsay's calling Arthur Blank, like, hey, man, like, how, and Blank is just spouting, platitudes about Matt Ryan. I just think this is a, not only is he a massive upgrade over Carson Wentz from a football perspective, but you have appeased your owner with a guy who could be the solution for 3 years or so.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one, where it's, again, clear upgrade from what you had. Best out of that second-tier options. Indy wasn't in the running for a Deshaun Watson or a Russell Wilson, or at least it wasn't like reported that they were the finalists or in the thick of those type of sweepstakes. But out of the Jimmy Garoppolo's, the Baker Mayfield's, Matt Ryan is clearly the better option out of all of them. The reason why I have it five, and again, I talked a little bit about it last week. Dejani was a little bit more, I think, critical of it, but I was right there with them saying, like, they have to figure this out long term. I mean, Matt Ryan is no spring chicken here, and it's also not Matthew Stafford going, spending his entire career with Detroit and then going to L.A. Atlanta to Indy is totally different. The talent is different. Where they are in the stage of their careers are different. And more importantly, the reason why I have it as number five, and you'll see as we kind of go through the list a little bit more, this is happening in the AFC. If the Indianapolis Colts were in the NFC, this thing gets bumped up a little bit more because Matt Ryan is now, again, still, one of the better quarterbacks in that conference on a much better team. They were a playoff team a year ago with Carson. They weren't a playoff team. They were knocking on the door of a playoff spot last year with Carson Wentz. Matt Ryan probably gets them there in 2021. But now you're talking about 2022, where this whole conference is so much better. I mean, I look at it from New England standpoint. They were able to make the playoffs, but right now they don't feel like a playoff team. So that, you know, and I don't think that Indy is going to be the one that's replacing them. I think it's probably going to be Denver, or it might be Cleveland. It might be, you know, go down the list of all of these teams that have reshaped and redone their roster. Los Angeles Chargers are another one. The Raiders, I mean, that whole AFC West is so much better than it was a year ago, you know, minus the Chiefs losing Tyreek Hill, but they are still clearly going to be in the thick of it.
The win totals are like 11 and a half, 10, 10, and like 8.5 for the Raiders, maybe 9 for the Raiders. I mean, it's absurd. And yeah, it's going to be hard. I think Indy has a better chance than New England, a better path to the playoffs than New England.
For sure. Because the division is still up in the air. I mean, you could contend with Tennessee, but I still would take Tennessee in that circumstance. I think they upgraded with Robert Woods over Julio Jones. They brought back Harold Landry. You know, they are making the right kind of pieces there. And I like Mike Vrabel there as well. Again, it's possible that they win that division, but that to me is the only way that they're making the playoffs. And I would not surprise me. Yes, they improve at the quarterback position from year to year, but from a year to year standpoint, they still might find themselves in the same position just because the conference got better.
Yeah, it totally possible. I mean, it's, you know, you're not guaranteed to make the playoffs just because you have Matt Ryan. I just feel behind that line. If they can improve the weapons a little bit, Michael Pittman, you know, I think can turn into an alpha this year. And they are even at Caesars plus 115, the Titans and Colts are, to win the division. Before the trade, the Titans were a slight favorite. But that also was when it looked like it was sort of like they're being cautious with the Colts because they didn't know who they were going to end up having at quarterback.
Yeah.
And once the Matt Ryan rumors picked up, they certainly kept the Colts. They didn't want to get the Colts like 3-1 or anything like that and have people get burnt. The Falcons division future that I bet is looking like perhaps a foolish errand there. What are you gonna do, Sully? But your NFC AFC point is a good one, and that brings us to number four and number three. The aforementioned Carson Wentz traded to the Washington Commanders, whatever you want to call them, and Jameis Winston back to the Saints in a free agent signing as your number four deal. So you're essentially moving these two deals above the Matt Ryan deal because it's the NFC. And those trades those acquisitions could now make these two teams probably fringe playoff contenders at worst.
Partially. That's especially true with New Orleans. We were talking about this, especially with Debo, was in terms of impact. And impact can happen positively and also happen negatively. So when we're talking about Carson Wentz, I'm looking at that as a negative impact. I think that move sent back the franchise another 2-3 years. I mean, I don't understand that move whatsoever by them. So I'm ranking it high because it's drastically impacting that franchise in a negative way. So again, it's not positive. I'm looking at that strictly negatively from that franchise's perspective. I mean, we just were talking about Jim Irsay running as fast as humanly possible from Carson Wentz. And for some reason, Washington is like, nope, we'll take him. We'll take him before we see all the quarterback dominoes fall. We are going to be the first team that really moves.
Well, they whiffed on Russ. They wanted Russ too. And they had a big offer out for Russ and didn't get it.
You're telling me that you couldn't have waited to see, okay, maybe we don't want Deshaun Watson. Again, that franchise is going through its own off-the-field things.
I think that was probably
not going to get in the Deshaun Watson market.
We can't get Deshaun.
But you can wait and see, okay, if we don't want Deshaun Watson, but Deshaun Watson wants to go to a couple of these places that have quarterbacks in place. Let's wait and see what happens. I would much rather have Matt Ryan. You could be in that discussion. I would much rather have Baker Mayfield. You know, I don't know if, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo is available right now, but I would much rather have Jimmy Garoppolo than Carson Wentz. I don't understand why they acted so quickly. It felt super reactionary to losing out, like you said, losing out on Russell Wilson, that they had to make a move and they just kind of went super quickly. It's like what Denver did when they lost out on Aaron Rodgers, only they ended up with Russell Wilson as opposed to the Washington Commanders ending up with Carson Wentz. I think that move sends the franchise back. Again, there is the draft. They can figure that all up. Maybe they draft a quarterback and he's the answer. But if they are really going with Carson Wentz and that's their guy, I think it sets the franchise back, you know, a bajillion years. I don't think that they're anywhere close to contending because, again, it's not like you're going like Ryan Tannehill from Miami where it just didn't work out. You land in Tennessee and it works. This is his third stop now. Usually good quarterbacks, they show it in before they hit that third stop. And so for me, you know, I think that sends them back super, super, you know, in terms of competing in what is should be the easiest division in the NFL, or one of them. I don't see them contending whatsoever at all.
Yeah. Your point about the dominoes is actually a good one, because they made the move not knowing that Matt Ryan would be available. Like, they made the move before gathering all the information, not knowing Baker Mayfield might be available. You know, once you whiffed on Russ, you could have held off and held off and held off and played a little chicken like the Colts did and say, you know what, we don't – and granted, you know, the Colts don't get to do that if Washington doesn't take Carson Wentz off their hands. But, yeah, you get the feeling like the Colts might have been cutting Carson Wentz anyway.
Right, and that's the other thing. I mean, they were clearly – I mean, you have to be able to read the tea leaves throughout the league. Again, we see it, you know, in reports that sometimes come – 3 weeks later than when it actually occurred. You need to be able to see these things in real time. Again, not expect that Matt Ryan's going to be available, but see the domino of, okay, Deshaun Watson has yet to find his team. It seems like he's going to get moved this offseason. Let's hold back. It's not like we're in this big sweepstakes to go after Carson Wentz. It's not like a team's going to swoop in and go get him. I feel like you were the only team in the NFL that was vying for his services. If anything, the longer you wait, the closer you get to the draft, or the closer you get to these, you know, kind of temples of the offseason, that price goes down, whether he gets released or you can get him for a song and a trade. And we're not talking about these conditional, you know, playing time incentives and the thing goes up and things like that. I just don't understand the timing. I don't understand the target for them. So again, to me, it's up there because I think it's a bad impact move that's going to set them back a few years.
Oh, okay. Well, then that is totally different. So it's the impact. It's the impact. Yes. It's not the how much you like it. Jameis, I think.
Jameis is different. Jameis, yeah. I like that one because, again, we're talking about and that's where we're talking about the AFC and the NFC. On, you know, for everything being equal, I think Matt Ryan's clearly shown being a more capable winning quarterback throughout his career than Jameis has in his career. But the fact that you're going back to a New Orleans team where the coaching staff is pretty much the same outside of Sean Payton leaving, you were 5-2 before you suffered the torn ACL. You had a good touchdown interception ratio. You're in a conference now that is getting worse. You can clearly contend if you're in New Orleans. If you have Alvin Kamara right, if you have Michael Thomas right, you have pieces in place where you should be able to contend and make the playoffs there. And so when you're kind of splitting those hairs between those quarterback moves, I'm a little cautious about Indianapolis making the playoffs because that conference got better, even though they upgraded a quarterback. New Orleans is staying the same at quarterback, but because the conference got worse, I think their playoff chances improved.
And, you know, the Saints are a lot, the Saints are like 5-1 to win the division, right? Yeah. Whereas the Colts, let me look real quick. I was looking at this earlier on a different site for something I've got to do later today. I just want to find they have win totals and miss or make the playoffs. I'm not going to mention them because it's not Caesars. And look, win totals are not up across the board right now, either make or miss the playoffs, because we don't know the schedule. We know the opponents, but you don't know the order that they're going to be in. And of course, you know, moves are still happening. The Colts. Wow. What would you guess the Colts, win total is and their miss make playoff number is?
Win total, is it 9.5?
It is 9.5, Sully. Nice work. Over is minus 125, which is, again, you get two against Houston and two against Jacksonville. So
yeah.
Say that last year and they're not free wins. Make playoffs, the Colts are minus 152. Miss playoffs, Colts are plus 117. That is surprisingly high for me because I think it's going to be tough to get in, as we point out, as a wild card.
Right.
Man, that's an interesting number.
You're banking on, again, Tennessee to kind of continue take that step back and Ryan Tannehill to really, you know, have questions about that future for you to feel really good about that pick.
And, you know, the Saints. What do you guess the Saints win total is?
That's probably 7.5.
Eight plus 116 over. Yep. And then make playoffs, yes, is plus 145. Miss playoffs, minus 190. That's kind of a steep price there. Like, I feel like there's, I mean, I think the Colts are probably a better roster overall. Yeah. But I think it's probably negligible. Like, the Saints probably have a better defense. Both have good offensive lines, elite running backs. Maybe you're concerned that the head coach shift will be a problem. But, you know, But the quarterback's better for Indianapolis. I'm surprised it's that much higher, given that it's in the AFC.
Yeah, I think that's really, again, that's what it is. It's the conference to me is what makes the difference.
I'm saying the Colts are like,
no, I know, but you're talking about a much easier for at least, you know, at least you could have the conversation about winning the division for Indianapolis.
True, that's true.
You can't have that with Tampa Bay there now, especially with Brady.
And the AFC West could beat up on each other and, you know, two teams make the playoffs and then the Colts sneak in as a wild card. You got seven teams going. That's true. That's true. There's no, you can't really picture the Saints knocking off the Bucks in that division.
No.
Speaking of the AFC West, we'll wrap up with this. Your number one impact quarterback move, Russell Wilson to the Denver Broncos. No brainer.
I mean, clear cut, especially, you know, like we were saying earlier with the Deshaun Watson off the field stuff, so uncertain. This is a slam dunk. I mean, I've been saying for a while now that I felt like Denver was the latest Tampa Bay before Tom Brady, where all the pieces were kind of there. They just needed to find that quarterback. And if someone shook loose, we all thought it was going to be Aaron Rodgers, then that franchise can go to the moon. The same thing is said here with Russell Wilson. They didn't really, you know, they gave up a lot of capital. They gave up some good pieces in Harris and in Fant. But ultimately, I think that this is just a slam dunk move. Have to do it. I'm fascinated to see how Nathaniel Hackett's going to kind of use Russell Wilson in this offense with Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, I think, is still there. Javonte Williams.
DJ Hamler.
I mean, that is just going to be a very – Albert O, too. I mean, that's going to be a great offense. I think it's going to be fascinating to see that work. And so, again, it's not the long-term play like Deshaun Watson because he's – you know, because Russell Wilson is just that much older. But if you're talking about a five-year window, you know, just of straight contending, you had to make this move if you're Denver. I mean, you're looking at a division where it's Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes. Those two quarterbacks could run the conference over the next decade. You have to bring in somebody like Russell Wilson to at least fend them off for that first half decade. So to me, again, it's a great move. I'm fascinated to see how quickly they can kind of get things rolling here. But it's the number one quarterback move of the offseason by far for me.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't land Russ, they are probably the favorites to – I mean, not the favorite to have the number one overall pick, but like –
I mean, you're talking about probably, you know,
you're taking six L's out of the gate.
And it's so important for them to, and again, you know, it's an NFL franchise. It's going to be valuable no matter what, but in terms of just your franchises for sale, it is going, you know, that is a huge thing looming over the Denver franchise. The fact that you are now putting in a legitimate superstar quarterback there, again, it's not going to change it dramatically,
but I think it does.
But in terms of the asking price, like, is that
I think having Russell Wilson gets them over $4 billion.
Yeah,
which as Jason Lockenfora wrote in his recent column, is massive, because there are some NFL he thinks there are some NFL owners who are looking to potentially cash out, that, you know, just, hey, like, we can get $4 billion
right.
And change, like, you know, we didn't have $4 billion before we bought this franchise. And now we might. And they see that number and might think, okay, this is the perfect, like, maybe this will be the peak of NFL franchise value. One could even argue that, like, you know, the NFL conspiracy theory that they pushed Russell Wilson to Denver in order to crank up the value of the franchise, or that they were willing to give up whatever, like, that Broncos people in the Broncos management told George Payton, give up what you got to give up to get Russell Wilson, because the Broncos would have fetched a lot of money anyway.
Yeah.
Blue blood franchise, you know, Elway. Yeah, all the
there's,
you know,
so much Payton. History. It's one of the biggest brands in the league, in my opinion, for sure.
Yeah. And that wasn't, and like a pretty clean, you know, like, you don't have like Washington stuff, you know, yeah, or even, yeah, you know,
and good market. I think Denver's a great market.
Great market. You know, stadium caught fire recently, but that's about it. But at any rate, like, Russ just, it takes it over the top, because it's like, the problem would have been, you buy this franchise, you think, man, like, are we going to win? Like, I'm buying a franchise in the same division as Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, and now you feel like, okay, like, this is, if I buy this franchise, we've got a competitor, a Super Bowl competitor for the next, at minimum, 3 to 5 years.
And not only that, I mean, you know, Wilson's the perfect guy. If Aaron Rodgers wasn't going to get moved, Wilson's the perfect kind of guy to put there. If you lose out on Russ, if he goes somewhere else, I mean, are you really going to pursue Deshaun Watson and all of what that comes with off the field when you're trying to sell the franchise? I don't think that you are. I don't think that you're in that. So then you're in the Matt Ryan, Jimmy Garoppolo, Baker Mayfield type of discussions. I mean, it is such a steep decline that they would have went down talent wise. And you just said it too, in that division, you're not competing at all. If you have Baker Mayfield, Jimmy Garoppolo, I would take Derek Carr over all of those quarterbacks. You have the worst quarterback in the division if you go anywhere else.
Derek Carr would have been supplanted as the best quarterback in the worst quarterback in the best division of all time. All right, Sully. Great stuff as always, buddy. We got a full hour out of that. Squeezing the juice. Thanks, Bob Kraft, for the unprompted comments about Bill Belichick and for all the all season stuff that's happened. As always, follow him at Tyler Sully. Read him on CBSSports.com. We'll talk to you later, buddy. Appreciate it.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.